Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country. And there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We thank you very much for joining us here every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to midnight central. And again, we do have a live chat that's going on during the show. If you go to our website at darknessradio.com and click on the Listen tab, you'll see a link to listen to the show live and also to join our live chat room. It's free, it's easy, it's fun, a lot like Tim's prom date.
Ain't
it? And then we're going to, there's any time in there between 30 to 60 different other paranormal fans that like to talk about the all aspects of the paranormal, so feel free to join us in the Infinity chat room. Tim and I will usually be in there chatting with you as well during the show. I want to just thank everybody that's been tuning in, checking out. We are, as just making a mention, we have been sold out on most of the events. I have very few tickets left for the Queen Mary in December and very, very few left for the Stanley in November. Right now, we're like 10 left for the Stanley retreat that'll be taking place in November. It is, of course, Sunday night, and we're just wrapped up our Stanley retreat here in the end here of March. Had a great time, great speakers, great lineup, a lot of fun. We're going to be back next November. We've got basically a whole new lineup of speakers. Jason Grant, Chris, and Patrick will be there. The only speaker that retaining from this avenue is going to be Mark Macy, and everybody else is new to the bill. We're going to have Jeff Bellinger. We've got and he's got some exciting stuff coming up too. So I think we'll be seeing him on a new TV series.
Jeff's new book actually was featured on Maury a couple weeks ago.
On Maury, you loved that Maury.
I love me some Maury.
We've got Jeff Bellinger that's going to be on the ticket. Michael and Marty Perry are going to be on the ticket with us. Just a lot of fun stuff. So keep checking out darknessevents.com. We've got more events and more trips coming up and planned. So keep watching our site for that. I want to get into tonight's show. A good friend of our radio show and a good friend of our events is Mr. Bill Murphy out of California. He's a documentarian. He's a paranormal investigator and is really transcending quite a bit of the information that I've begun to glean for myself over the last year has kind of come from Bill's tutelage and learning. And the guy is just a genius with the information that he's able to share with me. It always boggles my mind how deep he goes with the different thoughts and theories and ideas on the paranormal. And, I'm proud to call him a friend and proud to have him on our show from time to time. And we were talking leading up to the Stanley event here that we just did about what he calls the Stanley effect. And it was an intriguing topic, so much so that we actually included Bill in on this event. He and Dr. Simeon Hine were kind enough to join us at the Stanley and do a talk, which was very well received, talking about the Stanley effect. And we wanted to do a little bit of a radio show for the people that were not able to attend to talk about these things because I think they're important. And Bill was kind enough to agree. And we're also including in tonight's interview Mark Macy for hour one. And Mark Macy is an ITC specialist dealing in spirit photography and communication. In hour two, we're going to be joined by Dr. Simeon Hine and Bill Murphy, and we're going to continue into this. I guess Mark Macy's theories and ideas kind of dovetail nicely into Dr. Simeon Hine's beliefs. So that's why we're going to run it this way for you. I hope that you enjoy the show as much as we're about to. So let's welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town, Mr. Bill Murphy and Mr. Mark Macy. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Thank you guys very much for joining us here. And Bill, as I said, you know, the stuff that you've shared with me over the last year and ideas and the paranormal and the theories are so intriguing to me because it has opened up different avenues of thought, which is something that the radio show, Tim and I are always trying to do with our show is, you know, maybe shake things up a little bit, give people a different perspective on the paranormal. And why don't we start off a little bit, just give a brief synopsis of what our conversation entails about the Stanley effect, and then let's bring Mark into it, and you kind of go ahead and lead through with Mark on the beliefs and theories of your theory on this, Bill.
Sure, gladly, Dave. And Tim, I hope you're doing well over there as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, the title, The Stanley Effect, was a result of going there on more than one occasion to attend the Darkness Radio events. And every time I would go, I was noticing little phenomena that was kind of new to me. I didn't quite understand some of the little subtle changes that can happen to a person when you walk through the hallways. Like, when I say changes, there's certain parts of the hotel where if you kind of paying attention just to yourself as you're walking, it's almost like you have vibrating pagers, like, all over. They just kind of walk through a field, and you feel this vibration. You can kind of back up, and you can find it again. Or sometimes you back up, and it's not there. So that was kind of made me quite curious, what is going on in the Stanley Hotel? I had no way to even try to begin to figure it out, so I was just being very much aware every place I would go to kind of keep my senses heightened. Then I noticed that sometimes other individuals, their behavior would almost change as well.
Right. That we've seen quite a bit at the Stanley.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes groups would be having a lot of fun, and then sometimes they would be having maybe a more excited state that, you know, was kind of hard to explain. So it wasn't just the festive atmosphere. It wasn't just, you know, everybody having a good time, but people were sort of having this experience there that they were trying to understand. And then furthermore, there were some things that were happening that were visual in nature that more than one person was seeing. And that was quite difficult for us to try to even get a grasp of what we were looking at. It was a light that would sort of move through the hallways. Some people would try to photograph it or videotape it. They were unable to do so.
Now, this was interesting because this was, our November trip?
Yes.
Right. No, was it this last November or was it?
Actually, no. It was
the spring. It was the last spring.
A year ago.
Right. I was over in the main building, and I got a call from Bill, and Tim and I were standing there, and Bill said, Dave, get over here. There's some crazy anomalies going on. We're standing in the hallway watching this light leap from wall to wall and into rooms. So we went chugging over there, and it was great because some of the people on Bill's film crew were a little bit more skeptical of the paranormal activity at the Stanley, and they were standing there with their mouths open. And go ahead and explain kind of the real clincher of the whole light jumping in and out of the hallways was that not only were you guys out in the hallway experiencing this, but tell the people what happened with the light jumping into one of the rooms.
Well, we saw it go from left to right, but it seemed like it was moving closer towards us, and it went from the right side into the wall on the left, and they had three guests in that room that were actually part of the event who'd opened the door and came running out of their room, and we were standing in the hall because we were watching this thing, and they were a bit freaked, and it's like they asked us, did we see that? And we said, did we see what? They go, a light came into our room, and we go, no, we couldn't see in your room, but we could see it from the hallway here going through the wall. So it actually would penetrate a wall, and it was I call it a dolphin because I don't know how else to describe the shape. It was sort of curved at the top, and it was sort of diving in. And they said from the inside, it came into the wall and, like, hit the floor and went along the floor. And it's really fast when it moves.
Right.
So that would tend to rule out that it was anything reflecting from exterior windows. So it seemed like it's something within the Stanley itself. And it may not be actual light, but we're perceiving it as light. So it's all of this sort of events that were taking place, I didn't really quite understand. And, you know, I was hoping through perhaps maybe even some forms of ITC, we could be able to sort of maybe have a little bit better communication. with whatever it is with held within the Stanley.
Now go ahead and explain to people that are just tuning in that are not familiar with all the terminology. We got to remember we have a lot of newbies checking us out each week. What does ITC mean?
ITC stands for Instrumental Transcommunication, and it's actually through Mark Macy that I first learned about ITC work. So perhaps this would be a good opportunity for Mark to go ahead and maybe get a little bit of a history of what ITC is and how the average person can set up an ITC experiment. Mark?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. I guess back in the 50s, when audio taping first became popular, people began to tape conversations and nature sounds and music. And sometimes they'd play back the tapes and they'd hear these little voices on tape, voices that by all rational thought shouldn't have been there. And a lot of people started collecting them, and they became convinced that it's the voices of spirits, people who have left the world, and they move in and out of our world constantly from their subtler dimension, I guess. And somehow they can impinge their voices on tape. That became known as EVP, or the electronic voice phenomenon. And then in the 1980s, ITC was kind of like a big jump forward. George Meek and Bill O'Neill developed a device called Spiricom that allowed two-way dialogue between our world and the worlds of spirit for the first time. And since then, there have been all sorts of amazing ITC contacts. As Bill said, ITC is instrumental transcommunication, and it's the use of a wide variety of technical equipment to get in touch with the worlds of spirit. So they've contacted people through televisions and radios and actually planted files in computers while nobody was home, files containing text or images. So that gives you kind of a taste of what ITC is all about. It's been going on in its more elaborate form since about the mid-1980s.
The particular form of ITC that intrigues me, and it's I would love to set this up at the Stanley, is the video feedback loop method. That's why some of the properties of the Stanley Hotel, they're interacting with us in ways that seems to be difficult to comprehend. If there's a message, if there isn't a message, you know, why are they revealing themselves? And people get results with ITC work that sometimes reveals the identity of the person. Other messages come through. We were witness to an ITC experiment just two nights ago where some of the participants were asking for Dale Earnhardt. And one of the people asked about what was the number of his car, which was number 3. And number 3 appeared on the screen using the video feedback loop. So it's kind of like...
Let's explain. For video feedback loop, if people watch that horrible movie, White Noise, Michael Keaton was doing that where he had the video camera pointing at a screen that was nothing but static, and it just created that video loop. And it was like recording within itself, correct? And then from time to time, images will actually make themselves appear?
That is correct. It's, you know, you do point it at the screen. You run a cable from the cameras out into the TVs in. So it creates this infinite electronic loop. And it's in that loop that it appears that there may be, there's a mechanism for the spirit world to make an appearance on the screen.
Let me ask you, and Mark, maybe this question's better suited for you. With that, using the TV, I mean, automatically you're going to get the naysayers that are going to say you're just picking up stray signals, and you know, from time to time there's just going to be flashes of things that, you know, the antenna isn't picking up. Can we also do this using a computer monitor that isn't hooked up to TV reception and set the video camera to the TV monitor, you know, or to the computer monitor and create a loop that way?
I suspect that would be possible. I've never, it's not been my experience that people have done that, but it sounds like we're open to any kind of possibilities. I mean, sure, if it works, that would be great.
Because, Bill, that should, in effect, should work the same way, shouldn't it? Because you can take your web camera and point it at your screen, and it'll start to create that weird hallucinogenic kind of spilling out. And isn't that essentially what you're doing? If you can increase that size of the screen and do that, do you think you could get it, or will that, because of the pixelization of the screen, can that cause more damage or possibly more matrixing?
I guess all that is possible. I mean, you know, matrixing is always something that we have to grapple with when we're either reviewing EVPs or doing real-time audio communication with a device such as Frank's Box or ITC work you know, in general. So it's, yeah, matrixing is something that you have to be able to be able to accept as a possibility, and then use your own intuition when you realize that it is not matrixing. Regarding the equipment that you're using itself, it becomes almost irrelevant, I believe, if it's a computer monitor and a webcam, or you're using even a surveillance monitor with a security camera pointed at it. It's the same thing. It's just creating this loop, and it's in that loop, you should have no appearance of a recognizable image, per se.
Right, but a TV set would inherently start to pick up stray RF frequency UHF frequencies and things like that, wouldn't it? So there could just be flashes of, you know, old reruns of I Love Lucy. You'll see faces pop up on the screen that you might not normally recognize, or...
Not if the tuner's not engaged. No, it shouldn't. I mean, there's, okay. Just because it's a cathode ray tube or an LCD or plasma screen that has a tuner in it, the tuner is not activated.
Okay.
It should not feed a signal into the monitor. And then if you're in video mode and you're going into the video inject, that is its source right there.
Well, now, and for the naysayers too, I saw, I think it was Sightings, Mark, I think I spoke to you about this when we first met. I think it was Sightings a number of years ago I watched, and they were showing experiments that were done with this, and the guy was actually getting video of his daughter that had passed away, correct? That she would appear up on the screen, or was it his mother or somebody like that?
If it was Klaus Schreiber in Germany, it was probably his daughter, yeah.
Right, I believe that's what it was, right. And so it wasn't just a stray TV signal, obviously, because it was picking up pictures of his dead daughter. Correct?
That's correct.
Or was it an actual photograph of her that it was showing back, or was it an actual moving image of the girl? Do you remember?
You know, we've had both come through in Europe, moving pictures and also still images of people on the other side. I don't remember that particular one. I know Klaus Schreiber received both on different occasions.
Okay. All right, so go ahead, Bill.
Well, the reason why ITC, I believe, is well-suited for a place like the Stanley is because, unlike many places that people investigate where you're shooting video, you're taking photographs, and you are attempting to record EVPs, all that is sort of after-the-fact communication, and not every place delivers an event for you right there before your eyes. The Stanley isn't the only place that does it. You can go to Waverly and you can have experiences right there that you can see with your eyes. They don't just appear in photographs after the fact. But
let
the
me just
Stanley,
ask real quick, because I know our listeners are going to hit me up with 100 emails after what we just heard. Now, was that like an alarm or a police car driving by one of you guys?
That was actually fire trucks outside the window here. Sorry.
I just checked because we always get people email me audio snippets of our show and go, listen to this while they were talking. You can hear the banshee wailing in the background. I just wanted to clear we weren't starting to talk to, you know, Thomas Edison here while we're doing our radio show. So
good to clarify. Yes. Good to clarify.
So go ahead then. You were saying with the Waverly also, you're able to get a lot of this same type of activity, correct?
Yeah, you do. You see things right before your eyes at the Waverly. The Stanley is one of the most profound, in my opinion, to have an experience right there that, you know, you really can't explain. And that's why, because it is real-time, it appears to be in the environment, it's why I think ITC experiments are valuable to happen at the Stanley.
Well, now, Mark, you do an experiment with something that you call the Luminator.
Correct.
That you created, and it actually creates this kind of static bubble, if you will, around, like you said, up to even like a two-block radius, correct? Have you ever gone into a haunted location? And I know what you're known for is you turn on the Luminator, let it do its deal for a while, and then you take Polaroid photographs of people, and it seems like ghost-like images of their face appear or of faces appear over their faces. Have you ever just started taking pictures in a haunted location using the Luminator, and have you gotten any spirit photography that was not attached to people?
Well, as you know, we've done it at the Stanley a couple of times, and there's a nice room in the basement of the Stanley that has a good lighting for these experiments, and we've gotten quite a number of faces in that situation.
Right. I mean, I know that when you're taking the photograph, like if I'm standing there and you take the photograph, we'll see the other faces there, but have you ever just taken photographs of like a room?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And, you know, with the Luminator going and seeing if spirit activity shows up in those photographs.
No, we've taken a lot. I've taken a number of pictures without people present, and it seems like for these images, the spirit has to move into our aura and pick up some of our ectoplasm to become dense enough to show up on film. So I'm not sure if ghosts would, these lost souls would have, they're very dense spirits, but I don't think they're dense enough to show up on the Polaroids in my experience. I could be wrong, but that's my feeling on the thing.
Okay.
You know, Polaroids are actually useful in a number of experiments. I mean, there's one of them that has always been a bit controversial, but nevertheless has yielded results, has been photography. And it's a form of, like, remote viewing at the beginning where you try to be able to form an image in your mind of what may be wrapped up in paper, like just a photograph, for example, or a drawing or a coin, just something that you don't would see, that the subject would not see what the object is. They try to visualize it, and then it may sound kind of humorous, but you take a photo of the person's forehead, the subject's forehead. And what was happening during the Ted Serios experiments is that Ted Serios being the subject in this case that was able to form these images on Polaroids, but you take a picture of the person's forehead, and if they were correctly remote viewing the item, the object, that object would appear in the photograph, in the Polaroid.
Hmm.
It was controversial. We've tried to redo it. Dave, I think you were present when you were in California.
Right,
we did
Santa
it
in, Paula, right?
Yeah, in Santa Paula. We did it with about 75 people. Now, ironically, we did get some of the same distortions in the image that happened when Dr. Eisenbud was doing the experiments with Ted Serios. But right before we started snapping the pictures, one of the six people out of the audience that agreed to participate, he actually named the item that was in the sealed envelope, and it was a photograph that I took when of the Eiffel Tower in 1988. So it happened to be in my photo album. So I never, you know, I took it from my home. I had it in storage in my garage. I said, nobody's ever seen this. Nobody knows I've taken a picture. Nobody's even know I went to Europe in the first place. So it's not like there was any way to plant a thought in somebody's mind. And I did mention it could be anything at all: cloud, cat, hammer, a star, drawing. It didn't really matter. It could be anything, because I wanted the people to realize that there was no basis for them to try to guess what the image may have been. But one of the six said, you mean if it's the Eiffel Tower, I could form that image? So my answer was yes, but I knew then already that there's a strong psychic component there that has to be involved. That person, even though he named it, did not form the image. However, that same person, just the other night when we were doing photography experiments, was able to form an image on the Polaroid that is very unusual. It's almost like one of Mark's pictures, where there's another being, another spirit that appears alongside of his head.
Yeah, you know what you said about psychic abilities correlates with my experience. And through ITC, we got some really amazing contacts for a period of time, and they shared all sorts of fascinating information with us, including. They said that we often refer to some ITC researchers as successful, and that's an incorrect statement from their perspective on the other side. They said certain people have this quality. They can, their mind is very focused, and they can penetrate the veil like a lance, and they have an ability to create realities on the other side with their thoughts. And we all have that to some degree, but some people are pretty powerful with that, and those are the people who seem to be have the right disposition for ITC contacts.
Amazing. Well, we have to take our first break, guys. Stay with us. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're talking about the Stanley Effect with our guests Bill Murphy and Mark Macy. We'll be back with more right after this.
The New York Times has raved about the show. The Star Tribune says it's paranormally funny. And the Biscayne Bugle said, how could they put this crap on the air and live with themselves?
I am so sorry for everything that has happened, because in spite of what Mike says now, it is my fault, because it was my project. Everything had to be my way, and this is where we've ended up.
Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town. This show is so frightening, it'll scare the pants off you.
Beat it.
It's people with a dirty mind that think like that.
On second thought, maybe you should just keep them on.
You'd be amazed how often I hear that. Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town with Tim Dennis and Dave Schrader.
Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, lovable and cuddly Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, Timothy. Oh my God, you are so Michael Jackson, you don't even know it. Well, we are back and we're doing an interesting interview tonight. We're talking about the Stanley Effect, which Bill Murphy has been kind enough to enlighten us on. We just finished up our event here at the Stanley, lovely Stanley in Estes Park, Colorado. We have a few tickets left for the November event that will be coming up November 2008. You can get more information on that trip by going to darknessevents.com. Click on the link and it'll take you right there. You get to experience the Stanley Effect firsthand by doing that. Let's get back into the show. We have with us Bill Murphy and Mark Macy. And go ahead, Bill. We'll turn it back over to you. I know that you're starting to go with some thoughts on the ITC, and I'd like to have you continue that out.
Sure. Well, where we had left it off is Mark was commenting about the psychic component.
Mm-hmm.
So let me make a sort of a general statement regarding that aspect of it. To do ITC work, it's almost like it doesn't make as much of a difference where you're doing the experiment and where you're doing your research,
mm-hmm.
because thought, memory, you know, all these sort of what's in the ether is non-local. So it's not like you have to be there. But the reason why I think the Stanley is an ideal location for that, because the Stanley Effect is a real-time experience. So you can go to that location, and through your own, you know, your five or six senses, you can experience the things right then and there. So that's why it fits very nicely with the real-time aspect of ITC work in general. But Mark, you were commenting on the psychic component. Did you want to continue that?
Yeah, I'll branch off of what you were just saying. It's been our experience that there are many, many levels of spirit, ranging from very light and loving worlds that are very subtle and fine, to kind of dark and dismal worlds that are confused and troubled. And that's these people, beings from all these different worlds, are moving in and out of our lives constantly. And we resonate with those beings that have similar attitudes to our own. So to me, the most important thing in ITC research is not just the psychic ability that some people have, but also the attitude in which we approach it. If we come from the perspective of fear or doubt, or harboring some animosities, we'll draw in some troubled beings who will kind of stir things up in our work and in our lives, actually. But if we approach ITC with in kind of a good frame of mind of goodwill and decency, then we attract really these fine, powerful beings who can really make a difference in establishing a contact field through which they can make pretty amazing contacts through our equipment. So I'd say a good 80 to 90% of ITC is really in the attitude, as well as in the psychic ability, which you can foster through meditation and different techniques like that.
You know, Mark, I've noticed that you do bring that into an ITC session as well. When you and I were having a Frank Spock session, we get these sometimes menacing-sounding voices and messages that aren't of a positive nature, and they could be pranksters or they could be worse. But, Mark, you have I like the way you handle when those kind of messages come through. You do dispel them rather quickly with a lot of the positive forces that you're able to muster.
Yeah, my favorite technique is just a heart meditation. You learn how to move your awareness from the head down into the chest or the heart, which mystics for centuries have called the seat of the soul. So we have like this highest self within us located near the heart. So when we move our awareness to the heart and kind of close down our head, our brain, you tap into some pretty powerful forces, good forces that can really wash away any darkness in the vicinity, I guess. Yeah.
You know, I've got a comment about heart sync for just a moment. I don't know if on your website, worlditc.org, if that CD, that meditation CD, is available there or not. If it isn't, then maybe you could share with us where it's available. It's been probably the most powerful meditation CD that I've ever got. I did not know about the effect that would happen when you move the consciousness from the behind the eyes to the center of the chest. When I was able to do it successfully, though, you experience worlds that were similar to this world, but wow, I mean, talk about a colorful place to go to.
Yeah, it was co-produced by myself and the Monroe Institute. So you could either contact the Monroe Institute to acquire a copy, or you could just contact me by email. That's markmacy@worlditc.org.
And that's Bridge to Paradise, is that title?
Right, Bridge to Paradise.
Yeah, Bridge to Paradise.
Let me ask you this, Mark. Maybe you could give some advice then for people like myself. I have a hell of a time doing meditation. I've tried. I will say, out of all of the discs and things I've tried, and I will admit I have not tried yours yet, I have one disc that was created that kind of coincides with the book The Secret. And its object is to knock you out. It puts you to sleep. Literally, it says this is best suited for you to listen to as you're falling asleep, and it'll work itself into your subconscious. So I don't know if that's really meditation, what I'm doing, but because, you know, to me, meditation is sitting in with your legs crossed and oming. So, you know, I don't know what it is. I can't get my mind to quiet down and focus enough to meditate. That Secret CD is the only one that's ever done that. Literally, I listen to it for, it's an hour long CD. I listen to 5 minutes of it and then I have no recollection until morning. You know, it's kind of like going on a bender at the bar. I take a couple shots of positivity and I'm out until morning. But how can people start to, you know, with the disc that you have, does that focus the mind so that you can actually, is it directional, or is it just music and moaning and tub thumping in the background? Because that's what I found with a lot of these meditation CDs I've picked up, is there's no direction, and then I start listening, and then I start writing lyrics to the beat of the song I'm hearing, or, you know, it doesn't seem to work for me, and I want to know how we can get there.
Yeah, the beauty of the Monroe Institute's technique is it's called HemiSync, and it sends almost inaudible sounds to the brain. It pulsates them from the left and the right hemispheres, and as it does that, it slows down the brain into a meditative state. And the ideally, a meditative state is when your body's asleep and your mind is still awake, and so you're not. It's not like a dream where you wake up and you forget everything. It's like you go into this meditative state, which is like a dream, but you come back remembering everything. And the HemiSync sounds really help a lot. So I'll give you a copy of my CD.
Oh, that'd be great. I appreciate that.
I think it'll help.
And that is sort of the mechanism behind meditation that Mark just explained. It's keeping the conscious engaged with the subconscious and unconscious minds. If you have all three online, so to speak, at the same time, you're able to recall the experience. So you can travel, you can resolve, you can meet, and when you do all these things in the ethereal world, when you're dreaming, unfortunately, as you're waking up, the dream sort of fades, and you go, "What was I dreaming about?" But if you do this while you're still conscious, then you can keep carrying the experience with you forever after that. It's actually pretty awesome. And now, me being somewhat the mad scientist of the paranormal community, I wanted to know, how is this working? You know, why, when I moved my consciousness down into my heart area, that I have such a vivid experience? And so I started doing a little bit of, you know, armchair research that I do, and end up stumbling across people that have had heart transplants. And if you know, there's sort of like, there's a medical study that's not widely published, but there's been some work that's sort of gotten out on it, where a person has a heart transplant, they end up with the some of the emotional characteristics of the donor. So, for example, if I had a heart transplant and the donor used to ride horses and work in a garden, I would suddenly take on these desires and these wants and get joy from doing that. So that made me even more curious. It's like, okay, so emotion really is carried in the heart? How is that possible? You know, I thought it was almost just like the heartache and heartfelt were just sort of, you know, terms that people would use. But no, it's real. The synapses in the brain, synapses in the heart, the two organs in our bodies that share the same characteristics. There's actual physical structure that's between the two that they share. You don't have that in any other parts of your body except the heart and the brain. So the heart does appear. appear to carry some the emotional memory of a person.
In Northern California, I guess west of San Jose, up in the mountains towards Santa Cruz, there's an outfit called the Institute of Heart Math, and they've spent several decades studying the heart and the emotional effects and the various effects of actually moving your awareness to the heart. So there's a whole science behind it. You can look up Institute of Heart Math on the internet, and you can find all sorts of interesting information about that.
So let's talk for a moment about some of the real-time aspects of not only, you know, ITC research, but then what people experience at the Stanley. And a lot of this, you know, Dr. Hine in the next hour will elaborate on, but what happened at the Stanley that kind of made me, you know, name the DVD about the Darkness Radio Retreat, the Stanley Effect, was when we went to the concert hall and we were having like a vigil, try to see if we could have a group experience. And we went downstairs in one of the rooms, and Mark, I think it's the room adjacent to where you're doing your illuminator photographs. It's not that room. It's one room over to the right. But
oh, the electric room.
Yeah, the electric. Right. And I didn't know that was the electric room, actually.
Right.
So, and it was dark, and we went down there, you know, after the vigil up in the concert hall main floor, right in front of the stage. We went downstairs only because a couple of the people in our group said there's something underneath the floor here. And for many of the people, it was their first time going to the Stanley. So I said, well, actually, there's a floor underneath here. So we went there, went into the room, which, you know, we found out later was the electrical room. But, you know, when we're trying to tape these events, you have to allow the people doing the camera work to kind of get into position before you. You tell them where we're going to go next, and they have to scoot off, and they get ready for you to go there so they can capture the moment as it happens. So they got set up, and we went down there right after they did. We reformed the vigil, and I got nauseous, and I don't normally, you know, I don't consider myself to be a sensitive, so either I'm blocking that, or sometimes I'm too science-minded, I'm working on that, and I'm trying to sort of develop a higher level of awareness, but we got into this vigil, and I thought I was just going to get sick right there to my stomach, and I had to break the scene. I bolted from the room, and, you know, much to, you know, the camera guy's like, well, we just set up, but it's really not about videotaping what's happening. It's about the actual experience. Everything on these DVDs, everything in the Darkness Radio events are actually as they're happening. Nothing is staged. So it's like, well, I'm sorry I can't go back in the room, but I'm not going to. It wasn't until the next day when a couple of the participants that were there during the shoot went down there to see if there's anything else that could have been causing it. And that's when they saw during the day that there was an electrical panel there.
Right.
And there was an electrician there. And he had this huge mass of copper wires that he was rewiring. And they go, what are you doing? And they said, well, you know, we're having some electrical upgrades done to the Stanley. Well, that mass of cabling coming out of the panel actually come right out of the mountain. So
right.
If you go to the bottom of the hill, you'll see the power plant there. Power plant sort of comes through the mountain, and it comes up from the Stanley, and it spreads out like branches of a tree. And it's like, wow, okay, so this somewhat antiquated wiring that's being now upgraded that maybe didn't have, you know, modern grounding construction at the time is sort of electrifying that granite mountain. So we engaged another group to find out, what is this mountain made of? Well, yeah, it's granite. It's got a high degree of quartz, and it's got a high degree of, particularly, of magnetite. And when you apply a current to quartz crystals, it does a conversion, and this is why crystals are so important in many modern electronics, because it'll create steady rhythmic timing purposes. It can modulate electrical current. You can, of course, clocks and watches have crystals in them. Not all of them do, but, you know, many of them do, are crystal based, and they can also create vibrations or resonance. And in that vibration, you can experience it as audio for a person that's in the field. It can also be interpreted as a light source. So the Stanley effect is very much a result of the physical properties of the location. It's a genuine effect. Dr. Hine is going to elaborate on that. His research I stumbled upon when I was actually trying to get the material on remote viewing. And after looking at his material, he goes into quartz and crystalline structures and what their property is and how humans experience some of the electrified aspects of crystals. So the Stanley effect is real. And whether it's holding memory or just creating an environment where we can then have a psychic experience, those are questions that I think more research would need to be undertaken to answer.
We need to take our second break here. We'll be back. We have about 12 minutes left with Mark Macy and Bill Murphy. And then stay with us. We'll be back after the top of the hour with more Bill Murphy and Dr. Simeon Hine. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
Once you have seen Dave and Tim in the light, you'll understand why we must return to the darkness on the edge of town. Stay tuned. There is more to come. Ghosts, goblins, witches, creatures of the night. Yep, that just about covers everybody Dave and Tim have ever dated.
Oh my God, this girl's really turning me on.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
And welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and we're talking to Bill Murphy. He's a documentarian, he's a paranormal investigator, and he's a medical PI. All right, maybe not the last part, but I wanted to round it out there with a nice little trilogy. Also joining us is World ITC Specialist, Mr. Mark Macy. And for more information on Mr. Macy and his amazing work, you can check out his website at worlditc.org. Again, that's worlditc.org. And for information on Bill Murphy and some of the great documentaries that he's shot, including The World's Largest Ghost Town, which takes place in a post-Katrina New Orleans, and also has a brand-new Queen Mary disc coming out in about 2 to 3 weeks. The new Stanley documentary will be out that includes behind-the-scenes footage of our events, also includes a documentary about the Stanley and about paranormal activity and some of the private investigations that Bill has done there and some of the amazing findings. So you're going to want to check that out. And then go to ghosttown.tv. Is that right, Bill?
It is correct.
Ghosttown.tv for all that information. Pick up those fantastic DVDs. Everybody that gets them loves them. You will definitely enjoy them. Let's get back in. We've got about 11 minutes left in the show with Mr. Macy. And I'll turn it back over to you, Bill.
Okay, well, Mark, I actually have a question for you. I mean, we were talking about, you know, piezoelectric properties of crystals, but rather than dwell on some of the real-time phenomena that a person can experience just by being at the Stanley, if you were going to be building the ideal ITC device, what would that look like, Mark?
Oh, boy.
I know, it's a big question.
That's a good question. My experience is that it's the actual device is not as important as the state of mind. But I suppose, let's see, if I was going to build the ultimate state of... they say that one thing that's important in ITC equipment is something that feeds back on itself. That's what I learned from a physicist in Germany, Ernst Senkowski. They found that whether it's feedback through a microphone and a speaker, or as you were talking about, the feedback loop through the video set, that seems to be to help with some sort of field that's created that allows IT, that facilitates ITC contacts. Beyond that, I guess a person would have to decide whether they want to try to get audio contacts or video contacts, or eventually someday I think computer contacts are going to be a lot more prevalent than they've been.
You know what, Mark? Along that line, I actually have a biofeedback device that is intended to display states of consciousness. And it's almost like it's using electronics so a person that is not as prone to enter a meditative state can be trained to do so. So like Dave, you're saying that you have a busy mind, but if you have a biofeedback device that is triggering you when you're reaching a higher state of awareness, and that higher state of awareness would be defined as having the multiple states of consciousness linked simultaneously, that may be a way that a person could have an experience that, although it would still be a subjective experience, nevertheless, for the person that reaches that higher state of awareness, they could experience psychic phenomena. And not exactly ITC, because in ITC, part of the goal is to be able to externalize it and record it if at all possible. What this does externalize is your state of consciousness. It's called mind mirror. So it's one of the, it's probably the only EEG that I know of that's designed for this purpose. So
let me ask you this, and you know, maybe we can do this little experiment here before we actually leave the Stanley this evening, Mark. The electric room that Bill was talking about, you know, we've had some amazing activity occur when we were there. You know, as a matter of fact, we did this great, Adam Bly did a light painting photograph of us in the room with Jason Hawes from Ghost Hunters and Grant Wilson and Tim and I. And while we were in there, appearing behind the photographer was the spirit of a woman that Grant Wilson could see very clearly. And that is the room that on our very first visit out there, Grant was in the room with about six other listeners, and suddenly one of the chairs flipped itself into the middle of the room in front of a group of people. The next time Chris Fleming and Grant Wilson were down there for our next trip, and they were doing some experiments, and one of the tables slid across the floor and slammed against the wall, I guess. There's been, you know, experiences of seeing the ghosts in the room. And I will tell you this, as embarrassing as this is going to be, when we were there last April, actually a year ago, we were having some problems with one of the pieces of equipment. So I ran down the back stairs of the concert hall to go get Adam Bly, who helps us with a lot of the technical issues. And I went chugging down the stairs and I got to that hall, and it's broad daylight, middle of the day, but it was just pitch black by that room. I mean, like, blackness was pouring out of that room. It was so dark. And I came running down that hall, and I stopped, and I looked at that door, and I thought, ooh, I really don't want to go by there right now. So I just yelled out, hey, Adam, need you upstairs? And turned tail and ran back up the back stairway. You know, and I'm not usually freaked out by things at these deals, and I'll go stay in a room by myself. But the whole idea was just it absolutely tripped me out, and that room is really freaky. I don't know if it's a high EMF or what. But I'd love to do a little experiment in that room, maybe turning the illuminator on and turning the lights off in the room, because your Polaroid has flash, correct?
I actually masked the flash off to get a low light situation.
Well, if we took off the mask and then and turned off the lights in the room, would that kind of have the same effect?
We could...
I'm just curious if the illuminator would help to illuminate what's in there. I mean, we've sat in there for investigations, and you can hear somebody walking around in that room with you, and everybody's sitting right next to each other. I would love to experiment a little bit more.
Let's do that. Let's experiment and do any kind of experiments there we can. We've
Excellent.
Got the opportunity. Let's do it.
Mark, what do you make? I know that you do a lot of the work trying to communicate with the spirit world, and you've certainly had, I mean, you've had everything from voicemails to recorded phone calls to emails from the other side. What is your take on the Frank's Box? And, you know, we mentioned briefly that the fact that there was, you know, it seems to come through with a lot of nasty words and things that just aren't heard on regular radio, so it can't be stray radio waves. What's your take of the Frank's Box, and is it maybe just appealing more to the lower-level entities?
It seems to enhance EVP. That's the best way I can describe it.
Okay.
But for ITC, what's involved is a team of people on this side working with a team of people on the other side, and they together, we have some real experts on the other side who can open up these communication bridges and send all sorts of really wonderful information through our equipment. When you open things up randomly with whatever means, such as a Frank's Box or one of these mini boxes, you're much more vulnerable to whatever happens to be around at the time. And that's when your attitude really comes into play. It plays a really important part in the kinds of contacts you're going to receive. So I think devices like Frank's Box open the veil a little bit. They enhance the EVP, but they don't bring it into full-blown ITC, because you need a lot of spirit world collaboration for that.
Well, Bill, you know, we've talked about this. What are your thoughts with the ground and the property being what it is, with the minerals and the type of soil and the type of rock and granite and quartz and all this going on there? and you've got something like the Luminator going on and the Frank's box going on, how do you feel that's plugging in? Is it amping up the paranormal field there at the Stanley then?
Yeah, I do believe it is. It's creating an atmosphere. Actually, just going to the Stanley, the atmosphere is already there just because of the geomagnetic properties and the piezoelectric result of that, the charged crystal and the magnetite. So, yeah, it's there. And if you're going to have other devices there, you're creating a mindset and an environment to, I think, facilitate spirit activity, spirit encounters, and ability to record them. And even if you're not able to record them, you can still experience them on a psychic level. Because a lot of these things, we have tried to record these light anomalies, and even though multiple people can see them, we weren't able to get it on tape. We rolled, two to three hours with a thermal camera, with the infrared camera, and a regular three-chip white light camera, and we weren't able to get it on any of, you know, the spectrums. I didn't have an ultraviolet sensitive, but, you know, certainly had the infrared. So we try to go beyond the visible spectrum to see maybe if it can be recorded that way, because you can see it with your eye. So, yes, Dave, all these things kind of come together. I think that if you can be doing EVP or ITC work at the Stanley, it is an amped up environment, to use that term.
All right. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. I'll let you kind of wrap up with Mark and cover some of the points, so we can dovetail this and lead it into our interview with Dr. Hine as well.
Okay. Well, something that, Mark, I think that you've done that is so important, and I'm actually inspired by the work that you've done to preserve the history of where ITC has been and where it started. And it inspired me to actually start recording all the researchers and look at the results and present their work, because I want to continue that. I want to be able to we should have this body of work for the researchers that come after us that can see where we've been. If there is one person that you could point to, Mark, that has been your inspiration, who would that person be?
I have to be George Meek. He's considered to be, by a lot of people, to be the father of ITC. He's the one who developed the Spiricom device along with Bill O'Neill. And I think he actually coined the term, well, I'm not sure about that, but he's regarded to be the father of ITC. He's the first person who developed the equipment that allowed clear two-way dialogue over between their world and our world.
Yeah, Spiricom recordings are absolutely amazing. Anybody who hasn't heard them, or if you haven't attended the Stanley event or any of the past Stanley events, you may want to go to Mark's website, because he's got those recordings there posted, and you could download them and listen. Using voice synthesis, you get a different kind of result than you get with standard EVP work. So, yeah, it's Mark, I think everybody appreciates the research that you've done and have
Definitely.
Put together and presented to us.
And Mark, you've been, of course, one of the more popular speakers we've had at the Stanley. I want to appreciate, let you know, we appreciate you coming out and spending time with us here this evening as well. We're going to be back at the top of the second hour with Dr. Simeon Hine and Bill Murphy. And again, for more information on Mark Macy, you can go check out his website at www.worlditc.org. And for more information on Mr. Bill Murphy, please check out his website at ghosttown.tv. We'll be back with more after the top of the hour.